from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it seems goofy. It just seems weird. It may, that is to say, to consider that a guy is actually sitting live in a radio studio at this very moment, on this very day, just to do a radio show. You know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm saying?
But I learned, well, first of all, it's just a treat to get on the roads here in Southern California, whence this broadcast originates, and drive anywhere with no traffic. I mean, I could go to San Bernardino and come back in the time it normally takes me to just turn the corner. So that was a thrill. And then second, I learned very early in my radio life, doing coming in to do a thankless task of reading Associated Press news stories ripped off the wire for your information on a Christmas day, that there's one ineffable pleasure about being in a radio station, any kind of radio station, actually any kind of communications facility on Christmas Day. You are 100% guaranteed you will not run into management. Now, that's not to slam the management here, because that's fabulous, but I'm just saying, you know.
You know what I'm saying?
Some Christmas notes for you, ladies and gentlemen. Barbie is routinely tortured by children, research has found, according to the Times of London. The methods of mutilation are varied and creative, ranging from scalping to decapitation, burning, breaking, and even microwaving. This, according to academics from the University of Bath. The findings were revealed as part of an in-depth look by psychologists and management academics. The hell are those?
When I grow up, I want to be a management academic.
Okay. Into the role of brands among 7 to 11-year-old school children. The researchers had not intended to focus on Barbie, nor on Klaus Barbie, for that matter, but they were taken aback by the rejection, hatred, and violence she provoked when they asked the children about their feelings regarding the doll. Violence and torture against Barbie were repeatedly reported across age, school, and gender. No other toy or brand name provoked such a negative response. You quote, "You might expect little girls to love their Barbie and expect an imaginary love in return. Instead, girls feel violence and hatred towards their Barbie," unquote, according to Agnes Nairn. Well, of course, somebody named Agnes Nairn is going to discover that. If they named her Christy or Tiffany Nairn, things might be different. Your research might have come over a lot differently. One interpretation of this phenomenon is that the children are reacting to the proliferation of different types of the doll. Fashion Barbie, Queen Elizabeth I Barbie, even Geisha Barbie. The children never talked of one single special Barbie. The girls almost always talked about having a box full of Barbies. So to them, Barbie has come to symbolize excess, Dr. Nairn said. She added, on a deeper level, Barbie has become inanimate. She's lost any individual warmth she might have possessed if she were perceived as an individual person. This may go some way towards explaining the violence and torture. Previous research from the United States into Barbie abuse, wow, it's a growing field, apparently, suggested that prepubescent girls destroyed the doll because she reminded them of adulthood at a time when they were still clinging to their childhood. Dr. Nairn found no evidence of this. Dr. Nairn, ladies and gentlemen. She also dismissed the idea that overweight little girls might be jealous of Barbie for being the girl who had everything, including a tiny waist. It was more likely to be a simple reaction against a toy that children had grown out of. And one more Christmas note for your listening pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. Weihnachtsmarkt is a traditional German Christmas market in Middleburg, Virginia. Middleburg resident Linda Tripp and her husband, German architect Dieter Rausch, are serving up bratwurst and other German delights to hungry passers-by. Longtime sweethearts Tripp and Rausch were married last year. They split their time between Middleburg, Virginia, and Germany, where they also have a home. So you can get bratwurst from Linda Tripp, Christmas time in Virginia. Hello. Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Christmas time, it comes but once a year. Bells are ringing and the family's all here. All the children want to help decorate the tree. And there's lots of nice presents under there for you and me. Oh, Santa Claus is coming, it's a jingle bell jamboree. Yeah, it's a jingle bell jamboree. Mama's in the kitchen, Papa's in there too. Yeah, that's right. Well, howdy, Uncle Bud, howdy, howdy, how are you? Yeah, we gonna play some old records and a few CDs. Or you can go in the other room and see what's on TV. Oh, Santa Claus is coming. Yeah, Santa Claus is coming. It's a Jingle Bell Jamboree. Jingle Bell Jamboree. Well, it's all right if there's no stockings on the wall. Cause what matters most is peace on earth. Goodwill to all. Well, everybody's got something that they believe. They say the more you give, the more you will receive. Well, don't worry if you can't give nothing at all. Well, it's the state of mind that matters most of all. Yeah, we'll all get together. I said, let's all get together for a Jingle Bell Jamboree. Yeah, it's a Jingle Bell Jamboree. Oh, it's a Jingle Bell Jamboree. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we're gonna go house to house. Yeah, we're gonna sing and come. Oh, ye faithful, it's a Jingle Bell Jamboree. Silent night, holy Jingle Bell Jamboree. Heard the Jingle Bell Jamboree.
Nigh Bethlehem on a wintry night, nowhere, nowhere, nowhere. Poor shepherds saw a lovely sight. When angel host in pasture bright burst forth from heaven's lofty height and sang Noel, Noel, and sang Noel, Noel. Peace and goodwill the Christ child brings, Noel, Noel, Noel. Saves all men from evil things, for he of whom the angel sings is Lord of lords and King of kings. Then sing Noel, Noel, then sing Noel, Noel. So Christian folk, put fear aside, Noel, 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 and spread the gospel far and wide, that joy be great at Christmastide, and God in Christ be magnified. Then sing Noel, Noel, then sing Noel.
Once a child and now a mother, Christmas came with all its glee. tinsel topped and crystal covered, she knelt to dress the dancing tree. And gone were all her thoughts revealing, gone was all the drudgery, all the worries she'd been weaving as she knelt to dress the dancing tree. And she thought of the times when she was just a child, and she helped her mother dress the tree. She thought with a smile how her words seemed so wise when she said, you long for days like these. And through her dreams, her sentimenting, came the sounds of her sweet son, full of life so unrepenting. Down the stairs her family came. And she said, little soldier, when you're older, you will love a girl like me and kiss her, hold her, remember I told you to dance around the dancing tree. Just a child, and you helped your mother dress the tree, and you think with a smile how my words seem so wise and you'll cherish days like these. Once a child and now a mother, thankful for her family, for sleeping babe and sleeping lover, she dances round the dancing tree. She dances round the dancing tree.
Hey, this is Robin Zander from Cheap Trick, wishing each and every one of you out there a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you, man. That is so kind of you to come by. I guess Cheap Trick likes to be in radio stations when management isn't around either. From the edge of America, ladies and gentlemen, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this Christmas Day edition of Le Show, a Christmas gift for Californians. California election officials have told one of the country's largest makers of voting machines to repair its software after problems with just vote counts and verification in the state's November special election. Nothing big, just vote counts and verification. The two V's. Bradley J. Clark, Assistant Secretary of State for Elections, threatened to start the process of decertifying machines made by Election Systems and Software, ESS, to those of us in the industry, if senior officials did not address the concerns immediately. Software problems included incorrect counting of turnout figures, a malfunction that prevented voters from verifying their choices were registered accurately, and one machine recording the wrong vote in a test. 11 counties used the company's voting machines last November. ESS equipment is also used in 45 other states, so listen here. Listen here. The problems in California are similar to ones the company has experienced elsewhere. In a primary election in Hawaii last year, glitches with the company's scanners led to a miscount of 6,000 votes. Just 6,000 votes, babe, between friends. It's the second time this week questions have arisen about electronic voting systems in the Golden State. The Secretary of State's office also warned 17 counties that machines made by Diebold must pass more rigorous security tests to be certified for use in 2006. At issue with those machines is the computer language that secures ballot entries and instructs election officials how to gain access to and tally the votes. Just that. Nothing big. The state's letter to ESS says it was imperative that company representatives take corrective action ASAP. A spokesman for the company said some of the problems were caused by operator error or misunderstandings about how the software was to be used. Well, that's okay then. A spokeswoman for the Secretary of State declined to elaborate further on the Election Day mishaps. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, my Christmas gift for all Americans would be a pencil to make an X and a little piece of paper with some boxes to make an X in. Forget all the rest of it. We're perfectly fine, ladies and gentlemen, with the idea that we still don't know who won the Iraqi election. It'll take 2 weeks, maybe 2 months. Okay, fine. But here, no. Got to have it right away, even if it's wrong. I say if it's good enough for Iraq, do they have machines? Do they have Diebold machines in Iraq? Can we get somebody in management to find out about that? Oh, I'm sorry. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get scared. The world is now hotter than at any stage since prehistoric times, according to a top climatologist. His startling conclusion comes as NASA reports that 2005 has been the hottest year ever recorded. Dr. Michael Coughlin, head of the National Climate Center at the Australian government's Bureau of Meteorology, said, quote, "One probably has to go back into prehistoric times and way back in them." He didn't say way, but that's just me for your Christmas pleasure doing that. "Way back in them to be seeing these sorts of temperatures." Unquote. Top British climatologists agree privately but are cautious saying so in public, according to the British newspaper The Independent, because no measurements were taken in prehistoric times. That's why they're prehistoric. It's one of the reasons. Dr. Coughlin is supported by research that shows carbon dioxide levels in the air are higher now than at any time in the past hundreds of thousands of years. What did we ask the dinosaurs? I don't know. They've only been around for 5,000 years. Isn't that right? Isn't that right, Kansas? And on a totally unrelated matter, a report released by the United States Department of Energy this week revealed that the emissions of carbon dioxide in this country rose by 2% last year. This output is the highest annual total so far recorded by the United States, according to the UK's premier science academy, the Royal Society. President of the Royal Society, Martin Rees, says the world needs to act with even greater urgency and resolve in order to reduce the levels of greenhouse gases which cause climate change.
Martin?
Might be too late, babe. Just strip down to your trunks and enjoy it.
Martin? The Royal Society, ladies and gentlemen, the Royal Society.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, because it is Christmas Day, it's time for the Christmas Day edition of the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
South Korean researcher Hwang Woo-suk resigned from his university on Friday after the school said he had fabricated stem cell research that had raised hopes of new cures for hard-to-treat diseases. "I sincerely apologize to the people for creating a shock and disappointment," Hwang told reporters as he was leaving his office. With an apologetic heart, he said, "I step down as professor." However, Wang still maintained he had produced the technology to create patient-matched stem cells, as he claimed in a May article in the journal Science. "I emphasize that patient-specific stem cells belong to South Korea, and you are going to see this," said Wang. A veterinarian. Well, that would be That would be your first clue. Huang had faked results of at least 9 of 11 stem cell lines he claimed to have created in a paper in Science magazine. "This kind of error is a grave act that damages the foundation of science," said a panel of Seoul University experts. So, maybe we should teach intelligent design. Deadline Sydney, Australia, photographs of a trainer conducting mock executions of young Australian swimmers at a military-style boot camp. We had this last week. All right. Can't apologize more than once for the same offense, ladies and gentlemen. That's the rule. The director of Victoria, Texas Parks has apologized after a church band was told it couldn't play religious music at a city festival. Attention, Fox News. Some Victoria residents had responded with angry emails over the music ban. Parks director Doug Cochran apologized during Tuesday's city council meeting. The Rusty Steins, a band from Holy Family Catholic Church, played the music anyway during Victoria's market days. Officials say no complaints were made about the band playing religious music. Authorities plan to develop a clear policy about religious expression at city-sponsored events. But wait, there's one more. I've got it right here. Dateline Madrid. The Spanish government expressed outrage this week after a comedian for a conservative radio station in Madrid held a 5-minute telephone conversation with the new president of Bolivia while claiming to be the Spanish prime minister. Hey, that kind of stuff only happens on satellite radio, doesn't it? Spanish officials were taken by surprise when Evo Morales, who was elected president of Bolivia on Sunday, announced that Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero had called to congratulate him and invite him to Madrid. "We were immediately suspicious when we read the comments, so we took them to the Prime Minister," said an official in Mr. Zapatero's office, who spoke on condition of anonymity. He looked at them and said, "I never spoke to Evo Morales," unquote. The radio station, which is owned by Spain's Conference of Catholic Bishops and is a critic of the Zapatero government, broadcast the telephone call, revealing that it was behind the prank. A radio station owned by Spain's Conference of Catholic Bishops pulled this prank, ladies and gentlemen. "Thank you very much," Mr. Morales said after the comedian invited him to Spain, according to a transcript. "I'd like to visit you, Mr. President." On Thursday, Miguel Ángel Moratino, Spain's foreign minister, summoned the Vatican's envoy to Madrid to demand that steps be taken to prevent such deplorable acts from happening again. Spain's justice minister accused the station of seeking to sow distrust between Spain and Bolivia and trying to ridicule Mr. Morales. "They have arrogantly humiliated a Latin American nation, whom they look down upon from a position of supposed superiority." The radio station apologized, but both Spain and Bolivia said the apology, which was conveyed in a private letter to the Bolivian embassy, was inadequate. The real Mr. Zapatero telephoned Mr. Morales Wednesday night, apologized for the prank, and congratulated him on his victory. A radio station owned by a conference of Catholic bishops, ladies and gentlemen, pulled that prank and has apologized. It's the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
Fat man's coming, fat man's coming.
You better watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, he's checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, knows if you've been bad or good, so be good, for goodness sake.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Santa
Claus is coming to town.
He's got a list as long as your arm. He's never missed a city or farm. Santa Claus is coming to town.
If little Hal and Charlie don't mind their P's and Q's, how sad, too bad they'll wish they had when the old boy blows his fuse.
Take my advice, the first thing you know, you will improve your status quo. Keep your conduct steady.
He may bring you Hetty.
Hey, Santa! He's a-coming. Santa's coming to town.
Of course, they meant weight challenged man coming. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show, and news now about the new Iraq. Saddam Hussein's weapons experts, known as Dr. Germ and Mrs. Anthrax, were released by U.S. forces, an Iraqi lawyer said this week. The U.S. military confirmed several high-value detainees were being freed. Military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Barry Johnson, hey, Merry Christmas, Barry, said they were among 27 prisoners considered senior members of the administration overthrown by U.S. forces, who now posed no threat to security, were neither charged with crimes nor material witnesses, and had no intelligence value. So thank you. Thanks for the 2 years. See ya. Hope you didn't mind the detention. Hope you liked the food. Bye. Have a good holiday. Don't forget to not write. Dateline Baghdad, insurgents and common criminals have kidnapped about 425 foreigners in Iraq since the invasion. That's according to a Western official talking to the Washington Post. The official, of course, spoke on condition he not be identified further. Isn't that Jim? It sounds like Jim. Was addressing an upsurge in the kidnappings of foreigners since October. What? You mean things are getting worse? I thought... 18% of the foreign victims have been killed, the official said. Of 40 Americans kidnapped, 10 have been killed. The number of foreign kidnapping victims given by the official is much higher than the 250 cited by some media organizations that are keeping a running tally. The reason for the discrepancy is not clear, although many foreign organizations do not publicize kidnappings for fear of making the situation worse. Insurgents have backed away from videotaping beheadings of Western captives, although one was posted this week. Maybe they just ran out of tape? I know that problem. It takes a lot of tape. Iraqis pay an average ransom of $30,000 in each case, the official said, although some Iraqis have reportedly gone bankrupt trying to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars. This is a kidnapping of Iraqis. Police officers receive reports of as many as 30 Iraqis kidnapped each day. Only 5 to 10% of the Iraqi cases are reported. The problem of kidnapping of Iraqis is not something that's gotten proportional attention, the official said. The breadth and scale is underappreciated. Crime in Iraq surged with the breakdown of security that followed the new Iraq. So I say, as I say, Iraqis pay an average ransom of $30,000. There is also some evidence of selling up, said the official, referring to the practice of some criminals who kidnap foreigners and sell them to insurgents. It's something people know they can do and have some confidence in getting away with it. Sounds nice. Don Rumsfeld is in Baghdad again. Secret trip. Not that big a secret. Associated Press knows about it. The traditional Christmas Eve midnight mass at Baghdad's Virgin Mary Chaldean Catholic Church started, well, it was a midnight mass started before sundown, you see, ladies and gentlemen, because the security situation is so damn good. By sunset, many of the parishioners seem to be getting antsy in the pews. I think there's a powder you can take for that. Just apply it liberally in the pew area. Antsy in the pews. This according to the Australian newspaper The Age. And dozens in the congregation decided to make an early exit after receiving communion, but before the Archbishop could give his final blessing. Or perform a radio prank. On even the happiest days in Baghdad, it is difficult to shake the long shadow of the insurgency, reports the paper. I miss how Christmas used to be, said Noel Yunus, a parishioner. The late-night mass felt special, and on Christmas Day we would stay out late with our friends and families drinking and dancing at the club until 2 a.m. This we can do no more, unquote. What? I thought things were... Mass was celebrated early so the churchgoers could get home before the streets became deserted. The parties at the clubs, which have long been shuttered, were replaced by smaller celebrations in homes. Even the Shiite Muslim man who for years has sold Christmas trees not far from the church complained that the holiday spirit is waning and hitting his wallet hard. In years before, I sold as many as 1,000 trees before Christmas. He said, this year I've sold 120. I don't know if I will even break even. Break even, he said, repeating himself. For your listening pleasure. Where do they get Christmas trees in Iraq, you think? Syria? In exchange for weapons of mass destruction? The once 800-strong congregation at the church is now down to about 150 regular attendees, said the church's priest, Peter Haddad. Many of his congregants have fled the country for Jordan, Syria, and elsewhere, while many more are just too scared that a church is a big target. Bombers attacked 5 churches in October of last year, killing 20. The confidence of churchgoers has yet to be fully restored, Haddad said. Last year, many churches in Baghdad scrapped Christmas celebrations altogether. Haddad and his parishioners said they are increasingly anxious as minority members in Iraq. The situation for secular Iraqis and minorities, such as Christians, appears to be growing even more complicated as a result of the elections in which Islamist candidates apparently took an overwhelming majority of the vote. We were optimistic before the election, but the results showed that people vote by their identities, Haddad said. I tell the people of my church that all countries have passed through difficult times. Now it's probably just our turn, unquote. Irony, ladies and gentlemen. The new Iraq is a worse place for the Christians, for the Iraqi Christians. Isn't that wild? Isn't that just wild? Speaking of the Iraqi election, you probably know this. The politician and one-time administration and U.S. newspaper source, Judy Miller's good friend, Ahmed Chalabi, appears to have suffered a humiliating defeat in the Iraqi election. Although, who knows? We don't know the result yet. I don't know how they know this. There's been some preliminary vote counting, I guess. Of course, you know that there's been also massive demonstrations against the election on grounds of fraud. But back to Chalabi. Preliminary results in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad indicate that Chalabi's Iraqi National Congress scored 0.36% of the votes. A third of 1%. In the Shiite city of Basra, can I say Shiite on the air? Okay. The results indicate Chalabi, the current deputy prime minister, who was at one time and then more recently again bruited about as a possible prime minister. Longtime exile, supplied other exiles to news organizations and policymakers who told stories about weapons. He had an equally dismal showing in Basra, 0.34% of the vote. It's consistent. It's kind of a nationwide trend. In the Sunni province of Anbar, well, it doesn't say how many people live there, so I won't share that figure with you. That's just raw. Those are raw figures, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to share those with you. That would just disrupt things. The election results in Iraq may present Chalabi's ardent U.S. supporters with a quandary. Chalabi, as well as other losing candidates, is alleging fraud in the election. Interesting. Even though the Bush administration hailed the vote as an historic step forward for democracy. Interesting. This according to NBC News. During the election, Chalabi's campaign posters proclaimed, "We liberated Iraq." Apparently, they were, 0.36% of the people were happy about that. Just last month, you remember, with the help of major U.S. lobbyists, he toured this country, meeting with Dick Cheney and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and appearing widely on American television. You know, I bet he could get more than 0.36% of the vote here now, especially if we use those ESS machines. So Ahmed Chalabi may not be Iraq's new prime minister.
La, 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 la.
It's Christmas Day. Security's great. As long as you don't mind your head on a plate. Electricity's rare. A nice job is rarer. It's a good day to share. Just don't be the sharer. The troops had their turkey. The aroma lingers. We still have purple ink on our fingers. It's a Baghdadi Christmas. Who knew what that meant? Until Ahmad Chalabi got 0.3%. There's nothing sadder than a three-legged wallaby, unless it's Christmas with Ahmad Chalabi. Cheney came visiting, Rumsfeld did too, bearing gifts of fine contracts, new things to do. Some gifts from Iran also under the tree. It's a good day to share, just be the sherry. A nation divided still didn't dare trust the man who'd hung his hopes with such care. He's not sure he grasps the message they sent. Ahmad Chalabi got 0.3%. What might the odds of a Jordanian collar be? A perfect Christmas for Ahmad Chalabi. Not even Santa's returning his calls. He wished for some luck to go along with his balls. The Yanks will skedaddle, it's too late to stay. Our leaders will guide us the rest of the way. They're more religious than a Christmas Eve mass, which may be why this wise man is back on his ass. Too late devout, newly defunct, like a fruitcake that's been quietly junked. But civil war only a strong man can prevent, even if he only got 0.3%. So what might the odds of him standing much taller be? A comeback next Christmas for Ahmad Chalabi.
Comes home. Oh, every day. Yes, it will.
It'll be like a
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's a Christmas Day edition of me reading the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, of course. But we waive the copyright provision on Christmas Day. So, use it will. You're welcome. Come on. What? I should hold back? Now? First, in the spirit, Tyson Foods launches faith-friendly marketing campaign from Advertising Age, the Bible of the advertising industry. This is Advertising Age's writing, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Don't blame me for the wordplay to follow. Here we go. Tyson Foods wants people to have a wing and a prayer. The chicken marketer, which also sells beef and pork, has begun offering free downloadable prayer booklets on its website, with mealtime words of thanks expressed across a variety of faiths from Christian to Muslim. The move is seen as one that could become more common as marketers position themselves as faith-friendly. What started out as the internal manifestation of Tyson's mission statement, a set of core values that includes, quote, striving to be a faith-friendly company and to honor God, unquote, has over the last few years morphed into placing 128 part-time chaplains in 78 processing plants across the country. And now, the external marketing initiative to play a part in mealtime prayer. Says David Miller, director of the Yale Divinity School's Center for Faith and Culture, quote, there is a broader trend among bigger businesses to be faith-friendly employers, acknowledging that employees don't want to leave their soul in the parking lot. That may just be because they get charged extra if they do. Given that 95% of Americans believe in some sort of higher being and identify at some level with a faith, Miller says, a logical extension of that internal strategy is to reach out to consumers with a similarly faith-friendly message, quote, being careful, of course, not to trade on religion to sell more product, but expressing faith-friendly values in a gentle, low-key way, unquote. A decade ago, he said, consumers would have said efforts such as prayer booklets have no place in the public arena, but people don't compartmentalize anymore. They want to be who they are 24/7, unquote. And Tyson is banking on those more openly religious folks appreciating the company's recognition of who they are. Quote, people are not just buying our products, they're buying us. And they're spending more and more time on the internet, looking on the internet and elsewhere to find out what does this company stand for, unquote, said Bob Korskaden, chief marketing officer of Tyson. Consumers researching Tyson, says Ad Age, are likely to find on the net a chronicle of Tyson's long history of accusations of labor violations and illegal political gifts. So the magazine adds, a little religion couldn't hurt. Tyson has been developing the Giving Thanks at Mealtime booklets since the program's kickoff in late August. For the last 2 years, taking its time with consumer research and working with Miller and others to determine that prayer books would indeed please rather than put off would-be purchasers. Although it is looked to tie to some faith-based organizations, quote, teaming with any one religious group could alienate other groups, said the marketing director of Tyson. He adds, it's a sticky wicket, unquote. He turned British for the moment. Even the non-denominational effort strikes some as risky. Quote, it's a tough line they're walking not to become a preacher or provide religious services. They don't want to appear holier than thou, said security analyst John McMillan. Especially since Chairman CEO John Tyson is known to have battled against drug and alcohol addiction before becoming a born-again Christian. Tyson has no plans to use direct faith-based efforts for traditional advertising in the near future. But its ongoing Powered by Tyson campaign is based on a larger brand premise of proudly powering the world that rose directly out of Mr. Tyson's religious values, in addition to the idea of protein as power. That's according to Craig Ramsey, Bamsey, Director of Business Strategy at Faith Popcorn's Brain Reserve. Faith Popcorn, she's still around. Yes, her real name is Plotkin. What do you want? Her group developed the Powering the World strategy for Tyson, and she firmly believes that success for food companies in the future rests on selling their ideologies as much as their food. It's a very different marketplace than it used to be, and for a lot of people, seeing companies express their faith openly is a huge positive, Bamsey said. Next week, selling naming rights to your newsroom. When I read the trades for you. No wonder it's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Meanwhile, on TV.
And I says whose segment of the factor tonight. The war against Christmas may be over for this year, but just because the secularists suffered a major defeat this December doesn't mean they're folding up their tents. Far from it. And our next guest has everything but the facts to prove it. He's my good friend and Fox News colleague, the author of The War Against Christmas, John Gibson.
Hey, Bill.
John, always good to see you, but I have to say, my friend, I'm a little bothered by your new crusade. You're saying now there's a war against Groundhog Day? Can I have that right?
You sure can, Bill. Hard as it may be to believe, the politically correct inclusionistas are targeting another American holiday tradition, this time trying to make Groundhog Day safe for other species.
Now hold on there a minute, John. You're telling me the ACLU now wants to take the groundhog out of Groundhog Day?
I know it sounds wacko beyond wacko, I've already been able to document an entire proposed lawsuit against the Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania organization that's sort of the official group behind Groundhog Day as we know it today.
Right. See, this is where I think the left just goes so far off the map, you can't find them with a radar screen. This is just an enjoyable little holiday, a harmless part of our national culture that they have to turn into a battle in the culture war. John, who's behind this lawsuit? Is this one of Michael Moore's little escapades?
Bill, as far as we can determine, we are behind it. But that's just the beginning. And, of course, we're way past the beginning. Yeah. Before long, you can be sure that the usual suspects are going to show up. And then it's Katie bar the door.
John, the groundhog's a rodent, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that what we're talking about here is fairness to rodents?
Pretty much what it boils down to, Bill. Yeah. Activists say the celebration should be open to squirrels, since the groundhog is in the squirrel family. And before long, you've got everything from beaver to street rats being swept up into this thing.
Yeah, well,
we're right now trying to get into contact with the Reverend Jesse Jackson to see if his people are behind the effort to include the Zambian veldt dog in this.
Zambian veldt dog?
Mm-hmm.
Just what? Is that to make African Americans feel included?
Well, that's what we want to know if Reverend Jackson will say. Mm-hmm. So far, he's ducking us.
No surprise there.
Mm-hmm.
What about the PETA people? Don't they object to using an animal at all to see a shadow on this particular day? I think they'd be up to their eyeballs in this.
You would think that, Bill. That's a very good idea for my next phone call.
Yeah, I mean, they probably just want to wrap a towel around a stick put in the ground and see if it casts a shadow. Some fun that would be.
Exactly.
All right.
But the key here, Bill, is that all this is pushing in the same direction, stripping another American holiday of its Judeo-Christian roots and turning it into just another fundraising opportunity.
Yeah, well, that's something we're not going to allow, John. And if you have to write and sell another book to keep that from happening, I hope you're going to come here and talk about it with us.
Well, I hope so, too.
Any reason aside from the obvious why we're not hearing about this in any of the elite media?
Your guess is as good as mine.
John, I'll give you the last word.
Bill, it's shocking, and it's going to stay that way.
My good friend John Gibson alerting us to the war against Groundhog Day. I'll tell you this, folks, it's not going to happen because we're looking out for you. Back with your emails after this.
Merry Christmas, baby. Sure did treat me nice. Merry Christmas, baby. You sure did treat me nice. Gave me a diamond ring for Christmas. Now I'm living in paradise. Feeling mighty fine. Got good music on my radio. Ooh, I'm feeling mighty fine. I got good music on my stereo. Well, I wanna kiss you, baby, while you're standing beneath the mistletoe. He came down the chimney about a half past three. Left all these pretty presents that you see before me. Ooh, Merry Christmas, baby. Sure been good to me. I haven't had a drink this morning. I'm all lit up. I'm all lit up. Ooh, like a Christmas tree.
And now a special Christmas treat for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Angela's dog trainer corrections.
Just a selection. The article Extinction Along Interstate 10 incorrectly referred to a mastodon as a dinosaur. It is a mammal. An article about radio personality Howard Stern last Sunday mistakenly said he is optimistic about the future of broadcast radio. It should have said he is not optimistic. An article in Saturday's California section gave the name of the East Coast Crips, a street gang operating in the area, as the East Side Crips. Whew, lucky Tukey's gone. And finally, a review of BBC America shows in Friday's calendar section said actor Robson Green was on the British television show Second Sight. He was not. Los Angeles dog trainer corrections, ladies and gentlemen, for you. And with that, I think that just ties a lovely Christmas bow on this holiday edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the Internet at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow. On channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, it's the clean channel, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com and at iTunes. And it would be just like starting a new year next year, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.